Welcome to the Legacy Podcast. This podcast is a series of conversations centered around understanding the values, beliefs, and intentions behind leaving a legacy. You will hear from successful business owners just like yourself who want to leave an impact for generations to come. Let's get started. Welcome to the Business Legacy Podcast. I have a very special guest today, Stephen Nally, author, entrepreneur, and CEO of Blackbriar Advisors, who has two books, one on relentlessness and two on mental toughness and developing that mentality. So welcome, Stephen.
Hey, how you doing, buddy?
Good, good. So tell us a little bit about kind of your origin story, but also, you know, when you think about just the overall concept of where you are today, what do you think about? So tell us a little bit about Blackbriar. Tell us a little bit about your discovery to be an author and a little bit about yourself.
Sure. I'll give you the 2-minute overview. Yeah. I grew up in a very, very small town, rural Florida, the middle of Florida, Putnam County. Graduated from high school, enlisted in the United States Army. My dad was in the Army. My grandfather was in the Army, so forth and so on. I want to do my patriotic duty. I spent 8 years in the military, 4 of which I spent with the 10th Mountain Division as a light infantry commando. Another 4 I spent as an active reservist with the 2145th. Upon coming out of the military, I had the Army College Fund and the GI Bill. I want to take full advantage of it. Got a bachelor's degree in healthcare administration, a master's degree in business, and then got a doctorate in business and decided to be a healthcare administrator, which I did for a short time and then made a transition into the biotech industry. And I was working on the mergers and acquisition side of the biotech industry and Salesforce development and launches. And I think it was 2001, the FDA just put the kibosh on approvals, new drug approvals. So the year before you had 173 drug approvals, 2001, you had, I think it was just under 17 drug approvals. So I could already see where that was heading. Like, okay, it's getting tougher and tougher, fierce competition. Met a gentleman who was entrenched in the commercial real estate industry. His name is Charles Bray. His partner was Joseph G. Gillespie. Met with them about making that move into the commercial real estate segment, and they hired me on the spot. Within a year, I became the chief operating officer of a $1.6 billion real estate concern, mainly oceanfront hotels. In resorts, and pretty much been in that industry, you know, ever since. After Ocean Waters spun off, I created a company called Inner Circle with one of the partners, Joseph G. Gillespie. And now since 2000, since COVID hit, I've created a company called Blackbriar Advisors. And the only differentiation between all of those is that Ocean Waters owned and asset managed its own resorts. Inner Circle owned and managed its own resorts and managed for third parties. Blackbriar Advisors consults mostly investment banks and hotel owners on transitions and workouts, you know, per what's going on with the pandemic, you know, today with a lot of hotels being functionally obsolete. And then what do you do with them? Do you convert them to apartments? Do you convert them to office? Do you just shut them down? Do you demolish them? I mean, what do you do with them? You know, so been doing a lot of consulting in that area. But what I'm really excited about right now, you know, is this perfect storm with the bad news being that I believe 40% of all hotels are functionally obsolete now. Okay. And this affordable housing crisis. Mm. And when I say affordable housing, I'm not talking about Section 8 and HUD. I'm talking about affordable housing. You know, most communities that you're in, you go out to rent an apartment and you're looking at for a 1-bedroom, you know, anywhere from $1,300 to $1,500 a month on the low end here in Florida, mm-hmm. right? Well, you could take a hotel and you could properly convert that, you know, to affordable housing. And you could literally be in there at about $12,000 a key versus $126,000 a key to build it from the ground up or to buy it. So there's a way to get rents down in the $600 to $700 a month for a 1-bedroom and actually include the utilities and the cable and the Wi-Fi as a part of that package. Then you take those huge amenity spaces that the hotels have, like the banquet rooms and stuff like that, and you can convert those to things that will actually be beneficial to school-age children, such as tutoring centers or storage units. I mean, there's tons of things that you can do with that space that an apartment typically doesn't have. And it works. That's what I'm excited about. Those are the types of projects that I'm looking to invest in and purchase and convert, you know, on my own accord as we speak.
Yeah, that's extremely exciting. I thought that affordable housing might be a valid transition from a hotel, but now that you highlight it, you know, some of these hotels have just a large footprint. Conference yeah. rooms that are not being used at this point. So I can't wait to see how that turns out as far as utilizing what you're envisioning. Now, was this your original thought or was this a collection of ideas that was brought forward?
Collection of ideas. I mean, if you go back, I'd say 10 years, we had already done this model twice in which we called them hybrids. Mm-hmm. We would take a hotel that's say 500 rooms. That was the largest hotel in the market and really couldn't support that many rooms. And we would convert, you know, 150 units to condos. So you would have a condo hotel or, you know, convert them to extended stay apartments. And then you'd have a hybrid hotel, extended stay, you know, on top of that. So we had already done two of those and had great success with them, you know, but then the affordable housing, you know, crisis became more and more over the last couple of years. So naturally, the question I was getting asked the most 6 months after COVID hit was, what do I do? You know, what do I do? I have a hotel that's functionally obsolete. It's probably never going to open again. And even if it could open, I'd have to come up with about $15 million of capital to retrofit it. What do I do? Mm-hmm. You know, and I say, well, you just said it yourself. The hotel is functionally obsolete. It's never going to be a hotel again. Right. But where's the need in that community? Affordable housing. OK, now it makes it much easier to joint venture partner with a developer or another investor to come in on that because the market makes sense. Mm-hmm. The market makes a lot of sense. I mean, in a lot of areas, especially in Florida, you know, your vacancy rate is less than 2%, you know, which is crazy. Mm-hmm. So why do I want to buy a hotel that runs 50% occupancy when I can? You know, when I can facilitate it to an apartment and run 98% occupancy on an annual basis. I mean, it just makes sense. Mm-hmm. And the expenses are much less. So my whole career, just to summarize this in terms of my legacy, my whole career has been about one thing, and that's making money. Not that I wake up every day and I say, how do I make money? But everything I've done is for profit up until about 2 years ago. So everything I do, there's a bottom line, there's a budget, there's a business plan, there's a ROI, there's a return on investment, you know, until a couple of years ago. And then I said to myself, well, wait a minute, why can't I take these skills that I have in this profession that I have and do some good with it, which is where I saw that affordable housing link to it. I started doing pro bono counseling for veterans, making that transition as I did from the military, you know, to the civilian world. And then I decided, you know, long after I'm gone, you know, books will live forever. So how do I take my thoughts and my principles and my foundations and put them into writing to leave them for generation after generation after generation? It was never my intent to be a, you know, a Tony Robbins or a Stephen Covey. It was more of my intent to get my thoughts out there to where that would be a legacy. That would be my legacy. If you know, what would Stephen think about this? Well, go read one of these five books. I mean, everything that he thought was in these books, how he did what he did was in these books. And that to me is legacy. Legacy is what happens after you're gone. What did you leave for society to benefit from? How will people remember you? I say to people all the time, how do you want to be remembered? If you were writing the eulogy for your own funeral right now, what would it say? Would it say what you wanted it to say? Because we're in control of our own movie script here, meaning I'm living in my own movie right now. I'm the director. I'm the writer, right? I can script anything that I want. I can be anything that I want to be. So I can literally write that eulogy, which I've already done. I wrote a eulogy about 5 years ago. An author, oddly enough, was one of the things in that eulogy that I would want. It's a bucket list of professional accomplishments. Being published in Forbes was another. Being published in Entrepreneur Magazine was another, which I've since done since I wrote that eulogy. So, you know, that to me is legacy. What do you want someone to say if they're giving your eulogy? That to me is how I define, you know, what I want my legacy to be. And then ultimately, you know, for my children to be successful and to take what it is that I've built and either expand it or do some good with it. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. If you were to go back to the individuals that you served with, how would they describe you at this point?
Oh, man. Well, this is going to seem funny. I talk to several of them on a regular basis. That's the beautiful thing about social media nowadays. You know, it's funny. When I came out in 96, right, there wasn't social media. So I lost contact with these guys for about 20 years. Like for 20 years, like, I wonder what this guy's doing. Like, we didn't even have cell phones. So when we got out, so you didn't have any information that you swap. Well, all of a sudden social media hits, boom, you start connecting with all of them again. So I speak to them on a regular basis. I think it's funny. I was a very young team leader. I was actually a team leader over a team that I was originally a member of. I was promoted into a team leader slot and commissioned as a non-commissioned officer. And so I had some direct reports that were best friends of mine. And I think that people would describe me as extremely tough, but fair. I'm extremely direct. It's all about getting from point A to point B. There's nothing in between. Everything else is an obstacle. And you'll have to kill me to stop me. Mm-hmm. I know that sounds funny, but that's where Relentless Pursuit came from, a guy that I served with. And he wrote me a letter of recommendation for a committee that I was applying for. And on there, he wrote, Stephen Alley is the definition of relentless pursuit. And then went on to describe chasing something down with reckless abandonment and continuing to pursue it until you catch it and then subdue it. And then rinse and repeat. That was the definition of relentless pursuit. So I think that, you know, it's ironic that would be the title of my first and second book, right? But that's where the term came from. So that's how they describe me, as a person with a lot of passion, a lot of energy, a lot of conviction, extremely direct, but fair. I would never ask anybody to do anything that I wasn't willing to do myself. Definitely led from the front. Mm-hmm.
For the audience who hasn't read the book, can you tell us a little bit about the framework of the book and how it came about?
Sure. Yeah. The book came from a concept. When I came out of the military, you know, every day in the military, there's a training schedule. Somebody else creates a training schedule. All you have to do is show up and perform. That's all you have to do, right? All that's done. What time you eat, what you're eating, everything's taken care of. All of a sudden, I'm out of the military and I'm sitting at my kitchen table and it's 2 days before I start college. And I'm thinking, how do I do this? What time am I supposed to get up? Like, what time should I get there? Like, how many hours am I going to have to study per class per week? And all this rushed through my head. And I'm like, oh, man, I got to get a job, too. I have to get a part-time job, right? So all this stuff's going through my head. And I said, back up, back up. In the military, we have a field manual for everything. You want to know how to tie your boots? Okay, there's a manual on it. There is actually a policy on exactly how to tie your boots. So I said, I need to come up with some foundation and principles to get me, you know, all the way through the other side of college. And here are a couple things that I came up with. One, you got to know what it is that you really want, right? You got to know your compelling reason why you want to achieve it. You got to have discipline to sacrifice what you want right now for what it is that you want later. You're going to have to prepare day in and day out, right, to become the smartest person in the room. Think about that for a second. The smartest person in the room. The smartest person in the room isn't the person with the highest IQ. It's the person who's most prepared for anything and everything, right? And then we go through this active continuous learning, which means we never stop learning. That's an everyday event. Mark Twain once said, I never let my schooling get in the way of my education. So we're talking about two different paths of learning. One is academic, one is self-learning. And then the last thing is passion. Man, you either hear about the wolf and the sheep or the lion and the gazelle. And it's funny because the lion gets up every single day and is moving, because if that lion doesn't eat a gazelle, then that lion will die. All right. Gazelles get up every single day and they are running from lions. They both are getting up at the crack of dawn, and they both are sprinting all day long and 100% focus on either staying alive or staying alive, right? So I figured a long time ago, and I put that in the first book, why not be the lion? Why not be the one that's relentlessly pursuing or chasing the goal, right? As opposed to the person who's running from place to place to survive. Like, forget that. I'd rather be the lion. So those were the foundation and principles in, you know, the book Relentless Pursuit, the foundation and principles of success. So, and I think with the most emphasis on that compelling reason why, because without a reason why we do what we do, motivation is crap. Mm-hmm. I'll drive to the gym. I throw on some David Goggins or some Jocko Willikens, man. I love those guys. And we'll get fired up for about 5 minutes. But that's it. That's motivation. Passion is something that fuels you. That's that compelling reason why, like that thing. In my acknowledgments in my first book, I'd like to acknowledge everybody that's ever wronged me, lied to me, cheated to me. Everybody's ever told me I wasn't going to make it. I wasn't going to get there. I was too dumb, too slow. And I just highlight a whole page and I say, thank you. If not for you, I never would achieve the heights that I achieved. You are my compelling reason why. That's what always drove me, was all the people saying, well, you're from a small town. Stephen, you can't do business on Wall Street. Well, Stephen, you never went to an Ivy League school. Meaning these were the things I constantly heard my whole entire life that I overcame. And it was because of that, because I always envisioned me running into one of these people one day and them saying, hey, how are you doing? I mean, it's funny you should ask. Let me tell you how I'm doing. You know, that was my compelling reason why. I believe that love is a weak motivator. Meaning I'm going to do this because I love my wife, and I'm talking in terms of business. Like, that's a weak motivator. Revenge, success, spite, those are very, very strong motivators. There's something about getting knocked down and getting back up and getting knocked down and getting back up. And sooner or later, you don't even notice you're getting knocked down anymore. You're fighting from your knees. Mm-hmm. You're swinging while you're getting up. I mean, you don't even notice you're getting knocked down anymore, which rolls into my second book, The Foundation and Principles of Mental Toughness. And we talk about that. We talk about making the uncomfortable comfortable. And that's important, right? Because the National Science Foundation did a study a couple of years back that said that the average human has between 12,000 and 60,000 thoughts a day, and 80% of them are negative. Think about that for a minute. Now, let me tell you how the brain works. Not a psychologist, but I'm speaking in terms of me. Our brain wants us to be comfortable. The minute we become uncomfortable, we quit. And the reason being is because we think we did our best, but really, what really is our best? You know, I believe that we're operating in what I call the 50% rule. When you become uncomfortable and you say, that's it, I can't do this anymore, you're at 50% of your true capacity. And if you can push past that, and in a minute, I'm going to tell you how to do that, push past that, okay, that's that second wind. If you've ever been running, if you've ever been playing a sport, if you've ever been done anything and you're thinking, man, I don't think I can take another step. And then all of a sudden you get that second wind. Right? That's what that is. You push past that 50% barrier and you just tapped into that reserve tank, because that's what mental toughness is. It's the ability to find fuel in an empty tank. That's what it is. It's not coasting in on fumes. No, you just find more fuel. And here's how you do that. You got to replace that word why with what or how. Mm-hmm. When adversity comes or life challenges us, we say, well, why did it have to rain today? Why do I got to go into work early? Why do I got to stay late? You know, why can't I ever have this happen for me? Why don't I have any money? All right. Your brain, based on the way that it's wired, is going to answer that question in a negative manner, because it's a negative question. Okay. However, if we say, what do I need to do right now? What can I do right now to make some extra money? What can I do right now to maximize this opportunity of getting into work early? You know, what can I do to maximize this opportunity this time that I have to stay late? You know, how do I do this? How do I do that? So we change that word why with what or how. So we're no longer a victim. We no longer sit around and say, oh, well, you know, I'm from a small town, so I wasn't supposed to go to Ivy League school. So yada, yada, yada. No. We can still go to that Ivy League school. We're just going to have to push past that barrier. And what we need to ask ourselves is, how do I get into Harvard? What do I need to do to get into Harvard? Not why can't I get in, or who was it? I can't remember who said it, but stay away from negative people. They have a problem for every solution. And sometimes that negative person is you. And there's been times in my life that negative person's been me. I'll stop myself and start laughing and just say, man, did I really just go there? Like mentally, I just come up with three reasons why this isn't going to work. And all three of the reasons were crap. It's just like, it's automatic. These negative thoughts pop into our head. So, and I'm going to give you one example if you want to test this theory of making the uncomfortable comfortable. Okay. Turn the shower on, freezing cold. Step into the shower with all your clothes on. Stand there. Stand there for 3 minutes. Okay. At first 30 seconds, man, that water is going to be cold. It's going to be uncomfortable, right? You're not going to be wanting to move. After a minute, it becomes warm. Your body adjusts. You push past that 50% threshold. Now your body adjusts and the water is warm. The initial shock is over. Now, I'll say this, especially during my military days, right? You know, when I was going through training, specialized training, difficult training, training with low graduation ratios, there's a lot of pain involved. There's a lot of pain. There's a lot of suffering. There's a lot of sacrifice. There's a lot of sleep deprivation. There's a lot of doing without food and water. And I would always say to myself, you know, when I would begin that journey, that's it, man. I just signed up to suffer. That's the new normal. Pain is the new normal. Being hungry is the new normal, which means when I feel pain, hey, we're normal. We're supposed to feel pain, right? I need that. Give me more pain. Give me more pain. I'll absorb it, right? Because it will become normal, right? I'm hungry. Okay, guess what? You're going to be hungry for the next 72 days, man. Okay, so make it normal. I would become the CEO of hell itself if I have to mentally get through a difficult situation, just simply by accepting that this is our reality. This is the world we live in. You know, it's funny, when COVID hit, you know, my phone was ringing off the hook when businesses started closing down. And man, I don't know what I'm going to do. Steven, I got all this money tied up in this, and I got to do this, and I got to do that. And I remember one of them saying to me, you know, after about a month, he said, you don't seem to be bothered by any of this. And I said, oh, no, trust me, I'm bothered. I see my bank accounts dwindling, too. Here's the difference. I just accepted this is the way it's going to be forever. This is the new normal. COVID is here to stay. People haven't come, well, if the vaccine comes out, then it'll get rid of the virus, or if the virus will run its course and it'll disappear. My mindset was COVID's here to stay. It's here to stay forever and ever and ever. I accept it. Let's do the damn thing. Social distancing's forever. Wearing a mask is forever. All of these things, it's reality. I'm not going to fight it. I saw people holding up signs. I ain't wearing no mask. I ain't getting no vaccine. I ain't social distancing. I ain't going back to work. Whatever it was, my mentality was all that's now normal. All of that is now normal. This is the world that we live in. People are going to have an opinion about the vaccine. People are going to have an opinion about the mask. People are going to have an opinion about returning to school. This is the new normal. Now, what is my opinion? I have my own opinions, but I'm not bothered by the global community and the fact that they have a difference of opinion, or even if they agree with my opinion. I mean, that's the new normal. So we wake up every day and COVID's a reality. And it makes it much, much easier then to focus on what it is that we need to get done that day, because I'm a huge proponent of what do I need to do right now to take my game to the next level. I'm huge on that. And I can't do that where I'm sitting there thinking, well, maybe the booster shots will do this. Maybe if they'll do that, but maybe if they double mask. I mean, I can't sit there and second guess all that. I just have to accept the fact that, hey, if they come down and they mandate that I have to wear a full chemical mask, okay, then that's just what it's going to be. If that's what happens, you know, I'm not going to waste much time thinking about what if this, what if that. It's going to be how do I utilize this to my advantage? Hell, I might even go in the chemical mask manufacturing business. I mean, find a way, you know, to make that work. You see what I'm saying?
There's a certain power or empowerment to know that you only need so little to survive. And it seems like once you make that decision internally and mentally, it's like, okay, things are going to happen. You're just going to push through them. and something beautiful, something innovative, something, a new opportunity is going to present itself. And the question, as you posed, are you going to be the gazelle or the lion? So yeah. Really eloquently spoken. Thanks, Steve. Based on everything that you're doing, pushing through and being relentless and developing mental toughness, how do you feel as though it's going to impact your legacy? What do you want to be remembered for?
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, the different lots for my daughters.
Yep.
I want them to remember me as Superman, the guy that no matter what life threw at them or threw at me or threw at us, no matter what circumstance existed, Dad was a rock. That's the legacy in terms of the way I want my daughters to view me. Superman.
Yep.
Superman. You know, and I think that they somewhat do at this point view me as there's nothing that Dad can't fix. Meaning Dad's the end all be all. For my friends and family, I'm the toughest guy on the planet. Now, I'm speaking hyperbole when I say that. I truly don't believe that I am the toughest guy on the planet. Like, I'm not going to go run and climb Mount Everest tomorrow. Mm-hmm. That's not what I mean. What I mean is I'm not negatively affected by much. I've been through a lot, meaning I don't sweat situations the way that most people do. People see me as very strong in that endeavor. Like, you know, how do you lose 30 million of value in less than 2 months? And you wouldn't even know it unless you asked me directly, you know, because that's the reality, right? So, you know, mental toughness. I think globally, the people who don't know me, what I want them to remember about me or what my legacy is that I did my best. When I achieved my best, I moved the bar again and again and again and again. And I just kept doing that. In my new book, I say that you should never compare yourself to anyone else. And, mm-hmm. and here's why. I don't compare myself to Warren Buffett because that would be stupid. Who am I compared to Warren Buffett? Who am I compared to, I don't know, let's say Bill Gates, Henry Ford, right? But I tell you what, though, Warren Buffett can't be no Stephen Nally. I'll tell you that. I always have the best chance of being the best Stephen Nally that exists. I'm guaranteed that chance if I work at it. If I triple down on my weaknesses and I put the work in, I'm 100% guaranteed to be the best version of myself that anybody could ever be. So when I compare myself to me yesterday. Okay. And I look forward to me tomorrow. That's who I'm trying to be. I'm trying to be me tomorrow, right? And I'm comparing myself to me yesterday. And that's what I would want the global public to know about me in terms of legacy is that not only did I do my best and tried my hardest, but I was always pushing to become the best version of myself that I could possibly be. I mean, I went to law school at 49 years old, WashU, graduated number one in my class.
Wow.
You know, and did that because it was something that was in the back of my mind. I'd always thought that I probably should have went to law school, you know, after grad school, but I didn't. So that sat around. Well, that's a part of me now looking at me tomorrow and saying, hey, Stephen Nally lawyer, which I don't want to be a practicing lawyer, but I want to go to law school. Okay, boom, let's make that a reality. That goes back in the beginning when I was talking about writing your own movie script. I can write my own eulogy, right? And then all I have to do is go accomplish those things. You see what I'm saying?
Yep. All right. These next two questions I haven't asked any guests, but you started getting my gears turning. I used to ask these questions frequently to myself. And the first question is, when was the last time you found your limit where you basically knew that you put in 100% of your effort, but it didn't quite go where you wanted to be? Like, when do you feel like you found a limit?
Wow. I mean, that's a great question because like 5-10 different things come to mind. There are physical limits, mental limits, financial limits. When I was in Mountain Warfare School, when I was in the Army, when I was with the 10th Mountain Division, I was in Mountain Warfare School, and we were doing a 20-mile forced road march, I think 120-pound rucksack in full gear. And I think about 10 to 12 miles in, I hurt my left knee really bad, which later we would find out was an ACL tear. Mm. So 10 miles to go, halfway done, 10 miles to go, got to finish this to graduate. It's one of the toughest schools in the military, I think mentally I said to myself then, I'm not going to make it. And I came up with this philosophy right after that. And I said, all right, so we're no longer trying to finish, right? We're trying to maximize. We're just, let me get five more steps. And it's funny because this road march was on a road. He had telephone poles, and I think they're every 100 yards.
Okay.
So my mindset gets the next telephone pole. And if I'm still alive, okay, then we'll go for another telephone pole. So I was counting telephone poles, you know, but I did it that halfway mark, say to myself, I'm not going to make it. There's just no way. My knee is not going to hold up. I think mental, you know, limits, I think would also coincide with financial limits. You know, there was a time right after the recession, 2006, 2007, around 2009, that I had an opportunity to buy a very, very large apartment portfolio, This would have been the deal that I think would have put the icing on the cake. This was a deal that I could ride into retirement. I'm probably exaggerating, but probably could even convert that, turn it into a billion, take that to be a $1 billion real estate concern, you know? And if I'm wrong about that, 750 million, definitely.
Yeah.
Couldn't raise the money.
Yeah.
Just could not get anybody to buy into my vision. Literally, no matter how hard I tried, and it seemed like such a no-brainer to me. And either it was too large of a check, too less of control, who would the management concern be? What would the organizational structure look like? Is this debt? Is this equity? Is this dequity? It just seemed to be very, very difficult to put together. I worked on that deal for 3 years, which is unheard of, to work on a deal in which everybody is telling you, no, stop, don't.
Yeah.
And I had to let that one go because I wasn't getting anything else done. Well, I'm sitting here trying to pound this round peg into this square hole every single day, 18 hours a day, right? All the gravy's just, it's just flowing by. And I'm like, I don't have time. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to get this done today. And yeah, I'd say that's when I reached my mental and financial limits was on that deal. That was what? It's about 5 years ago, 10 years.
The premise behind that question is, I consistently exercise. I go to the gym. I do that. But the question that I ask myself is, did I find my limit? And that,
yeah,
the majority of the time is like, no, I didn't. Like, I didn't find failure. I didn't, whatever. So that was kind of the check-in point is, are you approaching at a point where you're finding your limit? And if the answer is, well, I haven't found it in the last 2 years, then, you know, what are you doing? Right.
Yeah.
The second question that I ask, follow up to that is, when was the last time you surprised yourself, where you thought that your tank was empty and then you found out that it was only 50%?
Last week.
Yeah.
I've got two bad knees and a lower back. I'm actually service connected, disabled for my knees and my lower back. I try to run usually between 1 mile and 2 miles, 4 times a week. I got it in my head that I'm going to run 5 miles. It's last week, last Monday. I'm going to run 5 miles. And I knew in the back of my head, I'm not really going to run 5 miles. I'm probably going to run 2 miles. And then I'm probably going to walk, run. And I got to about that 2 mile mark. And there was that moment, that split second. I said, okay, let's fast walk. And then something else in my head saying, hey, run another 50 yards. Okay, that's enough. Now let's go another one. All right, let's just run for one more song. And I ran the 5 miles, which is the first time that I've ran over 3 miles in 15 years.
That is amazing.
And I'm going to tell you, with every step, that was my limit. With every step, right, that was it. You know, but I was surprised that I was able to keep finding fuel in that empty tank, meaning I had to keep coming up with these different reasons why I'm going to continue running, because I got to tell you, I had a lot of reasons why not to. I'm probably not going to be able to walk for 2 days. My knees are going to be swollen up. My back's going to hurt. I'm going to have sciatica, you know, but then I started thinking about, you know, what if I did run 3 miles? Is it possible that I could run 3 miles 4 times a week? Well, damn, man, I'm at 3 miles now. What if I could run 4? Like, could I actually run 4? You know, what do I need to do to finish this last mile? What do I need to do? Everything I got, man, I damn near crawled up my driveway too when I was done with that. But, and I'm not saying I'm going to go out and run 5 miles today, but you know, you asked me when I surprised myself, when I surpassed my limits, that's probably, you know, the most recent, you know, from a physical standpoint where I actually surprised myself. I mean, I'm 52 now, going on 53.
You look like you're 40. So yeah.
Yeah. Well, the road's not too kind to me when I'm running. I mean, it's all kind of, you know, bumps and my body's torn up from my military days, but, yeah, every now and again, I surprise myself. I don't surprise myself mentally very much. I mean, I can go days without sleep if I'm on something, if I'm working on something. So that doesn't shock me. But the physical stuff sometimes does shock me. I mean, I put up a personal best 2 months ago of a 435 bench press. I'm 52.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, I couldn't even bench over 300 when I was in my 20s. Like, how does that work? How is it that the older I get, the stronger I get? My bench press was under 300 in my 20s. Okay. It stayed at around 350 for the majority of my 30s.
That's amazing.
I hit 405 in my 40s. And now in my 50s, 435. So that type of stuff shocks me because, you know, I don't know if you're a boxing fan or not, but a lot of times when you see an older, aging boxer fighting a younger boxer, they say the last thing that goes is his power. The first thing that goes is his legs, right? Mm-hmm. Like that puncher still got a puncher's chance. He still got that power. Well, it's surprising to me that as the years go on, I get stronger and stronger and stronger, but yet weaker cardiovascular-wise, leg-wise, lower extremities, you know, don't have the endurance I used to. I mean, back when I was in 10th, man, I could wake up on a Tuesday morning at 5 a.m. and go run a marathon. I mean, that's just what it was. Now, you know, somebody asked me if my life depended on it, you know, could I run a marathon today? I say, just shoot me. I mean, just shoot me.
Yep.
You know, like I wouldn't even try it unless I had a compelling reason why. And if death is the compelling reason why, I'll take death. Now, if you have my kids hostage, I'll probably run the marathon, right? Mm-hmm. But my life, no, go ahead and cap me off, man.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Well, this has been really special. You've got me thinking about a lot of different things as far as mental toughness, relentlessness, the ability to surprise yourself. You know, usually that's my barometer test for, you know, growth mindset or someone that pushes through. Like if you can't answer the question, you know, when was the last time you found your limit and it's been over 2 years?
Yeah.
Or when's the last time you surprised yourself and it's been over 2 years? Then, you know, I know where your headspace is at.
Do you know what's funny about that? And you say that, I think I wish I'd spoke to you before I wrote the second book because I'd have put it in there. You know, when's the last time you reach your limit? That goes back to that 50% rule I was telling you about.
Yep.
Most people never really hit their limit because they quit before they get there because they think that they've done, you know, their best. And it's funny we talk about working out because that's kind of strange because our body gets very used to what we're doing in the gym, right? So like bench press, I do a 10-8-6-4,
yep.
Right? Well, I've done that for so long, right? That I don't really feel it. I'm not struggling when I'm working out, right? But every now and again, I'll have some high school kids, some football player, friend of my kids be like, hey, I want to work out with your dad. And like, boom. And I'll do their workout. And they're like, all right, we're going to do 135 for 25. Yeah. I'm like, 135, like that first 20 is it's like pushing a toothpick, right? But yeah, then all of a sudden it's like, hey, wait a minute, man, what's going on? Yeah. And then from that moment on for the rest of the workout, I'm done. Because I actually hit my limit. So now what I got to do, I got to push through that 50% threshold. And yeah. I can say, all right, look, man, stop being a bitch. You got to step up to the plate here. We got a little bit of adversity. All right. You're tired. That's the new normal. You got pain. That's the new normal. It's a burning sensation. That's the new normal. There is nothing going to be easy for the next hour and a half. Yeah. Everything is going to be hard. So stop looking for the break. Stop looking for the moment that you can rest. You know, at that point, I attack. When I feel pain, and I'm not talking about injured. If somebody's listening, there's a difference between being hurt and injured. Mm-hmm. Injured is injured. Okay, you need to stop. If you're injured, you need to stop. All right. But if you got that burning sensation that you get when you work out or you're running or whatever, All right. You're not going to die from that. Embrace it. Attack it. Attack it. Run faster. If you're running along, you're thinking, man, I can't feel my legs. Sprint for 20 yards. Like, increase the pain and then dial back the pain. But it's funny, you asked that question, when's the last time you reached your limit? And I think that goes hand in hand with what I'm saying. Most people never hit their limit because their ceiling is where their comfortability model is.
Yep.
You know, I don't like to do this and I don't like to do that because I don't like the way it feels. I don't like to run. I don't like to walk. I don't like to work. You know, I don't like to stay up past 9 o'clock. I mean, come on. If you really want to accomplish the things that you want to accomplish in life, you're going to have to make some sacrifices and you're going to have to go after them. And that starts with discipline, to sacrifice what we want right now for what it is we really want later. And pride is a great motivator. I didn't mention that earlier, like when I'm working out with these kids and they're killing me. These kids are killing me. I know they're laughing at me behind my back, but I'm thinking, man, I will not give you the satisfaction. Right? If we're doing 25 reps, I'm doing 26, man. If we're doing 12 reps, I'm doing 14. I mean, I literally am going to outperform you, outwork you, and I'm hurting twice as bad as you, and you're never going to see it on my face. Mm-hmm. You're never going to see it. They don't even know. Sometimes I have to turn my head and I'm thinking, my God, I don't know if I'm going to make it through this movie 10 minutes in. But when I turn around and they see me, you know, they say, man, and tell my daughters, man, your dad is, he's an animal. He's an animal. Like, you can't break him. Well, I'm broken when it's going, but my mindset is, I just signed. I'm now the CEO of hell. I just signed up for pain, man. Let's go. I got it. I need it. I got to have it. I got to get it every day. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. I absolutely love it. So this has been a pleasure. Again, Stephen Nally, CEO of Blackbriar Advisors and author. Steve, where can we find you? Where can we learn more about you and what you're up to?
You can get me at stephennally.com, and that's S-T-E-P-H-E-N-N-A-L-L-E-Y, stephennally.com. All of my information is there. You can find my book anywhere online, Barnes & Noble, Book Nook, Amazon, either one of them, Relentless Pursuit, Foundation and Principles of Success, Relentless Pursuit, Foundation and Principles of Mental Toughness. Both of those are out now. And anybody can email me through my website. If they had a question, I respond to every email that I get. That's how you get me.
Thanks, Stephen. Have a good one.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Legacy Podcast. Now, if you can do us a favor and leave a review, any type of stars on any platform that you use, it would be greatly appreciated. For more information about us, the other co-hosts, and the Legacy Podcast, go to businesslegacypodcast.com. That's businesslegacypodcast.com. Have a great day.